Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to the CAP, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante. Welcome to the CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and I am here to introduce you to college admissions representatives and other professionals in the field of college admissions. Our purpose is to serve you, the students and parents, so that you may gain insight straight from the people who ultimately make the decisions. Regardless of whether you apply to a particular school being highlighted in a given episode, you should listen to all of them, as each guest will give you tremendous insight and advice on every aspect of the college admissions process, prompting you to come up with your own follow-up questions for when you visit campus or meet with a college admissions representative yourself. Don't forget to visit our website, www.collegeadmissionstalk.com, or the show notes of each episode to access the alphabetical list of all the colleges available with the related audio link to the right of each school. The alphabetical list provides you with on-demand access to all of the episodes so that you may listen whenever you wish. And if you want to receive links to episodes before they are released on the podcast, along with other related resources, please fill out the email opt-in form also available on our website and in the show notes of each episode. Lastly, please email me with any questions or comments at collegeadmissionstalk@gmail.com. So are you ready? Let's talk about it. Welcome to the CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today Vern Granger, who's the Director of Undergraduate Admissions at the University of Connecticut, also known, of course, as UConn. Now, we did an episode with UConn back at episode 53. That was July 6th of 2022. So, Vern, I am so happy to be doing this follow-up episode, not only with you, but you, the Director of Undergraduate Admissions. So again, thank you for being here. How are you?
My pleasure. I'm doing great, John. Thanks for the invitation to be on your podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. And Vern, what can you share in terms of what's new on campus or any other exciting developments or upcoming projects at the awesome UConn?
Yeah. So a lot going on campus. I had a mentor tell me once upon a time that one of the signs that your campus is moving forward and progressing is when there's a lot of construction on campus, because that means that a lot of new buildings are going up. And so we're excited about the new construction that's taken place in the past few years and what's going on right now. So, for example, you know, we opened up a state-of-the-art recreation center for our students that opened up a couple of years ago that we've just gotten amazing response from our students. We also opened up new academic buildings, a new science building, a new engineering building. And so they add to the student experience. With the increase of students that we are bringing to the university, they are also increasing the capacity. And so there's a new residence halls that have gone online, and we have a new one that's going online this fall to be able to, you know, house and support the students when they come to the university. So those are just some great examples of the construction that's going on at the university.
Well, that's awesome. And I think your friend was right when they said that signs that your campus is moving forward is when there's a lot of construction. You mentioned the state-of-the-art recreational facility, new academic buildings, new residence halls. And the common denominator in all of this, Vern, is that you kept on mentioning for the students, for the students, for the students. And I think that's awesome, because I read recently that your retention rate is an amazing 93%, which is well above the national average. So what is it about your community, Vern, your academics, extracurricular offerings that make students want to return each year? Now, we know that the retention rate is the percentage of students that return after freshman year. but what is it that makes UConn so special?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think helps us stand out compared to a lot of other institutions is that we have a commitment to the first year. The first year is so important in the students' experience. The evidence is clear that the GPA that a student has after their first year is going to be the GPA that they have when they graduate or close to that. So there's a lot of evidence to point to why it's so important to do that. So the emphasis on the first year, we have a first year programs office that does a lot of great work with students when they transition to the university, letting them, educating them about the resources that are devoted to their student success. And even before that, when they come for orientation, we have a very comprehensive student orientation program that involves the entire campus, helping the students pick out the right courses, making those introductions to their academic advisors, and making those other connections that are going to be a part of their experience at UConn. So, the orientation, the first year programs, academic advising is obviously plays a big role in that as well, and helping to make sure students are on the pathway to graduating on time. And speaking of that pathway, our time to completion for our students is one of the lowest amongst other public universities in our peer group. So those other large public flagship institutions out there, we have one of the lowest time to completions in the country. And it all stems from our commitment to getting students off to a great start and putting that emphasis on the first year.
Well, I really appreciate that, Vern, particularly when you said, and I quote, "We have a commitment to the first year." And that's a message, again, to students and their parents. When you're doing your research for different colleges and universities, and of course, we note all the time that there's over 4,000 right here in the great United States alone, it's very important to ask, what is it that the college or university does in that first year to help students transition from the hundreds, if not thousands, of high schools that they're coming from to then come to campus and create this community, in this case, which we call the awesome UConn community with the 93% rate. So I appreciate you talking about that commitment. Yeah, please go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, I can just also add that there's a second part that we want our students to make sure that they're aware of, is that these resources are in place for students to take advantage of. Because when we admit a student to a university, what we're saying is that we know you can be successful. However, we know that there are some students who are not successful at UConn or whatever institution. And so we want to make sure that they know that they should feel comfortable to take advantage of those resources that are available to help them be successful and not wait until it's too late before they ultimately seek out those resources.
Well, I think that's great that you have that commitment again to bring everybody together early with your orientation programs. You mentioned that it's a commitment of the entire UConn family. It's part of your mission and philosophy. And I do. I think it's very important. And one of the reasons why you have that very high retention rate, because like you said, you don't want kids to ask about resources when it's way too late. You want to make sure that they are aware of what is available to them and that it is okay to take advantage with whatever it is, whether it's academic help, mental health, later on helping them with career choices. Am I right, Vern? Did I cover it well?
Absolutely. 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 I mean, those are all important for students to be aware of and not be afraid to seek out help. The students who are going to be the most successful are going to be those students who, again, are not waiting till it's the last minute. They are going to the tutoring centers, and they're making sure that they have regular contact with their academic advisor, and they're getting engaged with the campus and becoming a member of the campus community. Those are the students who are ultimately going to be successful.
Well, that's awesome. And I want to say, during my own review with my own daughters, we definitely toured the University of UConn. And I have to tell you that everything that you're talking about, it's just so evident when you're on campus. It really is such a great place for students to come for 4 years and frankly, beyond. So let's talk a little bit about something that everyone is really curious about, and that's that holistic application review. So Vern, can you explain your holistic review process and what specific attributes or experiences the admissions team looks for when reviewing those applications?
Yeah, John, I appreciate you asking that question, because I know that some folks just feel that, you know, we have a dartboard in our office and we're throwing darts, and those are the students who are ultimately going to be admitted to the university. But it's a little more in detail.
A little more complicated than that.
A little more complicated than that. And the reason why is that, you know, we know that most of the students in our applicant pool could be successful at the university. And if we had an infinite number of spots, we would be able to take them to the university. And that's the same, that's the case for, you know, universities throughout the country that practice selective admissions like we do at UConn. But the reality is that we have a very large applicant pool, and the pool is very strong. And so what we're ultimately trying to do is build a class that helps to support the educational mission. And so, I mean, there are a number of things that go into our holistic review process. You know, we're looking at that the students past record. So whether that be through the academic record, the high school transcript, or if they submit test scores, even though we are test optional, but if they do choose to submit test scores, we'll be looking at those things as well. We're looking at how the student can make contributions to our campus community, and, you know, the personal statements or the letters of recommendation, you know, those are the things that we are getting from the application that play into our holistic review process. So it's all of those things in combination that are the factors that go into our holistic review process. There's not one factor that we say yes or no to. It's a combination of things. Those factors are not weighted in the sense that this category gets 20% or that category gets 30%. They're all taken into combination, and we use those in combination ultimately to help us build the class of students that support the educational mission to the university. And so there is nuance in that, and we totally get that from a student or an outsider's perspective. But it's because we know that students come from different experiences, have different backgrounds, and all of those things should be taken into consideration when, whether it be UConn or any other university, is considering that student for admissions, because we know that for many of the students who are applying to our university, that UConn is the dream school, and they put all of their energy towards getting admitted and hopefully enrolling at the university. And so we owe it to them to make sure that we have a process that's thoughtful and it's taken into consideration all those different factors to help us build the class.
Well, I appreciate the overview, especially that you talked about the fact that most of the students that are applying, you know that they can be successful there, but there's only a certain number of freshman class that you could admit. But yeah, you also talked about wanting to build a class that meets the educational mission of UConn. And I think it's important for students to hear that again, because if you happen to have a good GPA, if your transcript is a good representation in terms of the student that you're going to be once at UConn, you know, again, we talk about based on the context of your high school, what were the courses available to you? What did you choose to take? How did you perform? And if you did well there, then they're really looking to see what kind of community member you're going to be. And as Vern said, how are you going to contribute? But, you know, you mentioned that educational mission. And I think a good piece of advice is, students, when you're writing your essays, particularly if it's a school that happens to have supplementals, be mindful of what their mission, their philosophy is, and maybe talk about what you've done in high school that it's kind of in line with that mission and philosophy, if you will, what you intend to do, not only if accepted, but frankly, even beyond, right, with that career later on. Vern, anything you want to add about that? Is that, am I on? Am I off?
You're absolutely on, John. That's great advice. And the other thing I would tell students just to be mindful of is that, you know, that educational mission is so important in the work that we do. And that's why we'll get, you know, we'll hear sometimes, my child was admitted to X school and they weren't admitted to your school. So what's the deal with that? And you know, it's them not really fully appreciating, again, the educational mission, the priorities that each institution is focusing on, because that ultimately is going to drive our admissions process and the decisions of students that we are ultimately selecting to the university. And some of those things are things that students have no control over. Right. And so they right. should not take the decision as a personal slap that we're saying that, no, you cannot be successful at our institution. That is not what the admission decision is. And I tell families all the time that the college admissions process is the absolute worst thing to equate to potential for success at an institution, or how well that student has done in their high school career, because that's, again, that's not totally what our job is with the college admissions process. It's to build a class that is going to ultimately support our educational mission and meet our institutional priorities in the limited number of spots that we have available. Because again, we also know that if we have too many students, that's going to take away from the educational experience that students have.
Well, that's great advice. And, you know, we're going to unpackage all of this a little bit further. One of the things that you mentioned a few times, again, are those institutional priorities. So, Vern, what is your institutional priority in terms of the number of freshmen you are looking to admit each year, of course, as that incoming class? And how many overall applications does UConn actually receive to ultimately then get that incoming freshman class number?
Yeah, so this year we got just under 60,000 applications for admissions to the university. So, you know, that makes our job tough for admissions. But the thing I will also add to that is that of the students who applied for admissions to the store's campus, you know, we took about half of those applicants. And so, you know, I think that's one of the things that folks need to remember. You know, our first year class is about 4,500 students, but we admit more than we have space for, and other universities throughout the country will do the same, because we also know that students are applying to more than one institution. I would love it from my seat that if that student who applied to our university, that was a guarantee one for one, that we admit them, that student is guaranteed to enroll at the university. But we know, honestly, that is not the case. And so, you know, we admit about half of the students who apply for admissions to the university. And we base that on our historical models of how many students that we need to admit. Generally speaking, to bring in the class of 4,500. And then within those, we also know that certain populations of students are going to be yielding to our university different than others. And that's going to go back to the total number of applicants that we have in our pool. So if we have an applicant pool that is majority non-Connecticut students, that's going to have an impact on the number of students that we're ultimately admitting to the university. And so there's a lot of science that goes into those decisions of how many students that we need to admit to bring into class, in addition to the art piece of the actual review piece, the holistic review piece, and how we are considering all of those factors in their application.
Well, I love that, because the review process, absolutely, there is an art behind it, but also a science. So sure you talked about, Vern, the fact that you had about 60,000 applications. You actually admit approximately half of that to ultimately yield that class of 4,500. You mentioned a lot of things, so I have a couple of follow-ups. Yeah. The first one is, in terms of in-state and out-of-state students at the University of Connecticut, UConn, is there a limit in terms of how many students you could accept from out-of-state, sir?
Yeah, so there's not a geographic quota that we are bound by, so we're not required to have X number of students come from the state of Connecticut or X number that come from a certain county in Connecticut, so we're not bound by a quota. What we are looking at, the applicant pool and the composition of the pool is really going to dictate, you know, a lot of that. You know, we're a university where the majority, because Connecticut is a small state, where the overwhelming majority of students who apply to the university are going to be coming from outside of Connecticut. And so that obviously is going to drive a lot of the decisions that we make and ultimately the decisions of folks who are enrolling at the university. So, you know, about half of the students who are going to be enrolling in our class this year, you know, we're projecting about half are going to be from Connecticut and the other half are going to be coming from outside of the state of Connecticut. And a lot of that is driven by the fact that the majority of students who apply to UConn are going to be coming from outside of Connecticut.
Understood. And, you know, again, I'm packaging just the application process a little bit further. Let me just ask very simply, what are the different ways for a student to apply to UConn? Of course, we're talking about things like early decision, early action, regular enrolling. And Vern, is there a benefit to applying one way over the other in terms of being admitted or even being considered for merit aid?
Yeah, so I'll take the early decision piece first. And so this is actually coming up. The students who are applying for fall 2025 is the first group who will be able to apply early decision. And just to make clarify for your listeners, what we are implementing is early decision, which is a binding commitment, which is different than early action, which is another early application process that is not binding. But what we have at UConn will be early decision. Our early decision application deadline is on November 1st, and we're getting those decisions out to students by mid-December. And what we're saying is that if you're admitted first choice campus, and major, and reason I say the campus is that UConn is comprised of five different campuses at the undergraduate level, our main campus in Storrs, and our four regional campuses throughout the state. But if you are selected, admitted to your first choice campus and your first choice major, that decision is binding, and you would be expected to withdraw your applications at other universities. And so early decision is not going to be for everybody. But it is going to be for that student who knows that UConn is the place that they want to enroll at and that they are willing to make that commitment to UConn, regardless of what their financial aid package may be. And so we always want to make sure students who do make that decision, that they understand what that decision actually means. That's why there is the parent guardian sign off for students to apply early decision, not only at UConn, but other universities, because, again, it is a binding commitment that the student is making. And so just being aware of that early decision deadline and what that actually means. Our regular application deadline is on January 15th. And that is not a binding deadline, and students will get a decision back from us on March the 1st, and they have until May 1st to let us know if they plan on enrolling at the university. Now, merit scholarships, how that plays into the equation, whether they apply early decision or not, it's not going to have a basis of whether they are going to receive a merit scholarship or not, because that's going to be based on our overall holistic review of an applicant.
Well, we appreciate that. And just a quick follow-up on that. It's interesting that you're implementing the early decision round for the first time with this upcoming class. Just curious, was it because of, you know, we talked earlier about the difficulty of figuring out that yield in terms of how many students are actually going to attend, perhaps more applications because of the test optional nature, Common App, obviously streamlining the process. Are those the reasons why you went ED? Yeah. I was just curious if you could share.
And yeah, John, I think those are some of the reasons why we made the decision to go to ED. And we've heard from our families that they would like for UConn to have an early notification option for students. And so we could have gone with early action. We made the decision to go to early decision because, you know, we felt it was important for those early applicants that, you know, we were going to be making decisions and we're going to be getting those decisions out earlier, that we wanted to have it for this population of students that we're going to be making that commitment to the university. So that's why we chose early decision over early action. I mean, as you pointed out, there is an enrollment management strategy to it because, again, you know that these are students who you're admitting, they're coming to your university. And when you think about how that plays in the overall applicant pool and meeting the class, that obviously is a piece that's a part of it. But we also are very, very mindful of the type of student who typically applies early decision and making sure that they don't run counter to our overall access goals at the university. And so making sure that we're not just in having an enrollment of students who were just admitted through early decision. So we're very, very mindful of that in our overall review process and the management of the applicant pool that we're going to be getting.
Well, I appreciate that insight. And I just got to tell you, what I take from your answer are two very important things. The first thing that you said was, you know, we listened to our families. And then you kind of ended with, we're very mindful of our students' needs, which I think is phenomenal. And I think it's so real and natural in terms of this flow of the conversation. And no wonder that retention rate is 93%. I want to come back, Vernon, and go to college. I'm going to come to UConn. I don't know if I'd get admitted, but I want to come to UConn. I love it. So getting back to the application review, has UConn made any changes to its standardized testing policies? And how do you currently weigh SAT or ACT scores in that application review?
Yeah, so we are still test optional. We entered into a test optional pilot a few years ago, and this will be the fourth year of the pilot. And so the last year of the pilot will be the folks who are applying fall of 2026. It's still hard to say that out loud that we are that close to students who will be entering in that class, but that's where we are. And so at the end of that pilot, we are actually right now in the middle of doing a research project in partnership with our College of Education. And so we're studying the impacts of test optional and making a determination of whether this is going to be something that we're going to keep permanently or if we're going to go back to our old policy of requiring a test score. So more to come on that piece of the decision. But as far as folks who are applying right now, I think the takeaway that I would want to make sure is conveyed is that when we say test optional, we mean test optional. And that's not a wink and a nod that's saying that, hey, we say test optional, but you really should when submit a test score. We truly are test optional. And that's not only for admissions. It's also the case for scholarship consideration, honors program consideration, and for our special programs. And so I think that's important for folks to keep in mind is that we truly are test optional in our process. And about 60 to 65% of our students over the time of the pilot have applied test optional. So again, we are seeing more students who are applying, utilizing test optional. And as it's worked out, probably about half of our class of students that we've admitted were test optional.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that half the class that's admitted is test optional. So again, it's 50-50 in terms of the students that are submitting and those that are not. And I appreciate you emphasizing that you are truly test optional, not only for being admitted to your great university, but also in terms of your merit-based scholarship consideration. So we really appreciate that. And have you seen any recent trends, Vern, in students' personal statements and essays that stand out? And perhaps could you share some tips for crafting a compelling essay?
Yeah. And the first thing I want to say is that I would encourage students to go to our website because we've added some great resources for students to be thinking about when they're developing their personal statement and essay, along with letters of recommendation, which I think are two important pieces of the application. But I think some of the trends that we're seeing, I think number one, we're seeing more, and this is a sad thing, trend that we're noticing, but we're seeing more students talk about mental health issues that they're experiencing. The stress that students are experiencing is real. The anxieties that they're facing are real. And that you know, lets us know about a larger issue that, John, I know you're very aware of and other educational professionals are aware of, that universities and just education as a whole needs to be mindful of. And so, you know, we've been talking to our staff about those types of things and how they're talking about it in the application, just to be mindful that more students are talking about that in the essays. So that's one thing. The other thing I would say is that, you know, as a result of the Supreme Court case decision that was made last summer on race and college admissions, you know, we've seen students trying to figure out if, how, why should, how they talk about their identity, their background in terms of the application review process. And the thing I would say about that is that UConn, and for that matter, any university, we don't want students to feel compelled to bring up experiences that are painful and things they don't really feel comfortable in talking about. And so on that note, if students want to talk about their racial identity, their ethnic identity, and how it's impacted their experience, then they should feel comfortable. But there are some students who don't feel comfortable with it, and we would say that they should not talk about it, and it's not going to be held against them in the application review process. So I think those are a couple things I would say. You know, as far as the advice, we know that things like ChatGPT are real and they're relevant, and we know your students are utilizing those those resources. But the thing I would remind students of is that, number one, they still should go through the same process of building their essay like they would any other writing project. And that means, you know, making sure they're checking identifying the resources, citing their sources as far as putting that thing together. So that's the first thing I would say. And then the second thing is making sure that they are using it as an opportunity to talk about their true and unique and authentic self. Because, you know, ChatGPT and other AI resources, you know, can tell us some things, but they're not going to be able to tell us things like, you know, my sophomore year, I experienced this and it had this kind of impact on my life. It's not going to be able to talk about those things. And those are things that could be valuable to the application read that's being done. So just being mindful, that's the advice I would give to students when they're putting their essays together. And we actually have a statement on our website that provides guidance on ChatGPT and other AI tools that are out there and their place in the application review.
Hey, podcast friends, if you've been enjoying the College Admissions Process podcast, I'm excited to share my new book, Straight from the Admissions Office, Insider Strategies for College Applications. It's packed with insights and tips from over 250 podcast episodes with admissions professionals designed to make the college process less overwhelming. Whether you're a student, parent, or college counselor, it's a valuable resource for navigating the admissions process. By grabbing a copy, you're also helping to support the podcast. The links are in the show notes. Thank you, and best wishes to all with the college admissions process. Well, I appreciate you pointing to your website. Now, I always put the Office of Undergraduate Admissions in the show notes, Vern. If there are any other resources, you talk about the UConn website in terms of essay help and even letters of recommendations, which we're going to come to in a minute. So if there are any links that you want to share, just send them to me. And of course, I'll make them available in the show notes. So speaking of the letter of recommendation, Vern, what makes a letter of recommendation truly impactful? And have there been any notable examples recently that made a difference in an applicant's evaluation?
Yeah, I mean, there will always, every year, there will be examples of letters of recommendation that really stood out, that helped to, you know, highlight some aspects about a student that were very valuable in our holistic review. I mean, I think from the student end, I would encourage them to be mindful who they're asking to do their letters of recommendation. Sometimes students feel that I'm going to go ahead and ask this business leader or this politician or wherever they stand out and thinking that it's going to be impressive in the review process. But when we get the letter of recommendation, that person really doesn't know anything about the student. And right. So the letter of recommendation really has no value to us. So being mindful about who you're choosing, making sure you're choosing somebody who can speak about your academic potential to be successful, about your character, about why you would be a good contributing member to that university community. So being mindful about those things. And then for a person who's doing the letter of recommendation, for them to be not parroting things that we can get off of the application. So when we look at an application, you know, we know that the student got a B in calculus, or they got an A in US history. So we don't need the recommender to repeat those types of things. You know, they should be talking about things that are not, again, those things I mentioned, character, academic potential, contributions to a community, but they should also be focusing on things that are not reflected in the application already. And so those are the things I would just say about advice for the student and who they choose, and advice for a person who's doing a letter of recommendation.
Well, those are great pieces of advice. Students, it's also true for your own essay. If you're regurgitating what could easily be found on the transcript in terms Absolutely. Of your academics, it's a missed opportunity. If you're just repeating what's on your activity sheet in your essay, that's a missed opportunity. Same Absolutely. Holds true for the letter of recommendation. If a teacher or a local politician or a business person, as Vern referenced, they're going to just write about the fact that you have a 90 average, a 95 average, or whatever your average is, and that you were, in fact, very active in the DECA club. But those are things that people like Vern and his colleagues can see very easily by looking at the transcript and activity sheet. It truly is a missed opportunity. And to Vern's point, it's not adding to your overall application review. Am I right, Vern? I know I'm just that's basically it. Repeating what you said, but yeah, is there anything more it. You want to add?
That's it. Yeah, I mean, students should not feel like they should not write the essay from the point of view that I want to do this because I think this is what the reader wants to see in my essay. Mm-hmm. They should be speaking in their own voice. They should be authentic. Again, telling us about all those things that I mentioned, that's the point of view that they should be starting from when they're putting together their essay or again, the folks who are doing the letters of recommendation, and not necessarily what they think that we're going to want to hear, or not necessarily trying to impress the reader, because again, that is a difficult task for them to ultimately get accomplished.
Well, I appreciate that. And I just want to mention that you talk about students thinking about when they're writing their essay, what is it that the reader wants to read about me? What do they want to see about me? And mm-hmm. it sounds like, you know, students sometimes are just trying to come up with what is the typical UConn student. And students, what I would say there is, if everybody wrote the same way because they're trying to portray themselves as the typical UConn student, you're probably not going to stand out in this very competitive process. So it's very important to reflect on who you are. It's not so important really in terms of the topic that you choose, whatever the topic is, and there are millions that you could choose from, but it's really important to talk about who you are, what happened, how did you reflect, what were the questions you asked yourself, how did you pivot, how did it make you better? And so am I wrong, Vern? I mean, you know, if they're just trying to be like any other UConn student, they're really not going to differentiate themselves, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But you brought up something that I definitely want to make sure to highlight as well.
Sure.
That is on the topic. So in the application, you know, if you use the common application, coalition application, there mm-hmm. are different topics that they could choose from. Whichever topic they choose, make sure that they're writing on that topic and not freelance. Right. and I laugh about that because you would be surprised how many folks will choose a topic and then choose to talk about nothing that topic has, nothing that topic is about. And so, and they should not, and I don't want to understate how things like that stand out in readers' mind, because when questions are asked, we're expecting, you know, responses and information about those questions. And so, again, it may sound like a little thing, but it, whatever essay topic they choose, to make sure that they're writing on that essay topic.
Well, that's a great point. And we know that currently the Common Application has 7 essay prompts. Yep. And the last one, by the way, is to pick a topic of your own. So if the first 6, you know, if they don't resonate with you, guess what, students? Number 7 is pick a topic of your own. So I appreciate that insight, Vern. Thank you so much. And so looking ahead, what are some of UConn's strategic goals or visions for the next 5 to 10 years? And how might these influence the university's appeal to prospective students?
Yeah, I mean, we know that more and more students are applying to the university, and we know more and more students are applying who are coming outside the state of Connecticut. So, I mean, those are things that we're very mindful of. I bring those up because, you know, we are still the flagship of the state of Connecticut. And so, you know, Connecticut students have been and will always remain very important to the university. But we also know that we are a national university, and for that matter, a global university, because we get students from all over the world who are enrolling. And so, you know, the diversity of our incoming classes is very, very important. And so we want to see students from different backgrounds. We want to see students from different places who are applying and who are ultimately enrolling at the university, because we know that that's going to add to the student experience for those who are enrolling at the university. So that priority of diversity is one that's only going to get more so, and it's not little D diversity, it's big D diversity that is important for us. And so all those different types of diversity, I think, are very, very important to us. You know, we continue to think about, you know, how we're bringing a class of students who are going to be able to contribute to our community, who are going to be academically successful. And so we are constantly evaluating our incoming students who enroll at the university and identifying those factors, those things that help us predict students who are going to be more successful at the university. And we're looking to take that information and have it inform our decisions on campus about what are the resources that we need to support those students who are coming to the university. And so, you know, student success is going to be a priority, and it's always been a priority, but it's going to be more of a priority because it feeds into things like retention. It feeds into things like indebtedness, time to completion, because the thing that no university wants to do is bring in a student who is not going to be able to be successful and have them enroll at that university for a year or two and accumulate all this debt and ultimately not graduate that university. And so we're looking to try to use data to better do our job of identifying those students who can be the most successful. And if there are things in students' records that we want to make sure are identified to be able to be shared with the campus that will be charged with helping that student be successful and graduate, we want to make sure that we're doing that part as well.
Well, again, the theme for this podcast episode, not only in the past, not only currently, but even moving forward with the great UConn, has been student diversity, student success, student resources, supports. I mean, that's something that really resonated throughout the entire episode conversation. So I really appreciate that. This has been an awesome conversation. Before I get to my last question, I want to ask, are there any questions that I didn't ask that you wish I had, or maybe a topic that you wish had come up that simply didn't? Anything else that you want to leave with us now?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things I touched on it very briefly, but I think it's just something that I want to make sure that your listeners are mindful of. And that's that whole topic of mental health. And we know that it is something that has existed for a while, and we're seeing more and more students talk about it in their personal statements. But I think the thing that I think it's important for your listeners to understand is that universities are focused on that as well and thinking about things that we can do to reduce anxiety and things that we can do to make sure we are supporting our students. So I think that's one big thing that we could have an entire podcast on that topic. I think it's that important. But for your listeners to make sure that they're aware of that is something that universities are focusing on and how we can make sure our students are supported and that they feel like they have places to go on our campus to help them throughout their journey at the university. And then the second thing is that the title of our office is the admissions office. And it's not the deny office, it's the admission office. And so that the point I'm making with that is that we want families to understand that we are available as resources. We're there to answer questions about our universities, about our processes, all of those different things. So they should not hesitate to reach out to the university if they have any questions about the admission or the enrollment process that the university has. And there are so many students who, and some folks who are out there who don't fully appreciate that and don't really take to heart that we know that these students and families are making a significant investment when they make the decision to enroll at our university. And with that, we as universities understand that we need to be able to be prepared to be able to respond to those questions that families have about why UConn or why any other university. And so making sure that they understand that they should not hesitate to reach out to that admissions office at that university they're looking at if they have any questions about that university's admissions process or the university as a whole.
Well, you heard it right here, folks. The dean of admissions at UConn telling you to reach out. It's yes. One of the reasons why we have this podcast. When I went through it with my own daughters, yes, you know, financial considerations, stress, mental health, you name it. You know, we went through a lot of different things as a family. Yeah. And the one thing that I realized was that you guys are so accessible, and hence the podcast was born. But again, Vern said it, to reach out. They are there. They are admissions officers. They are not rejection officers. They want to help you. That's what they're there for, and they're glad to do it, which is why we have so many great conversations with amazing people like Vern. So this has been a phenomenal conversation. I can't thank you enough. Unfortunately, it does lead us to that last question, which is, what are the top three pieces of advice that you would provide students and their families getting ready for the college admissions process?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the things I've been doing this profession for 25 years.
Awesome.
And over 25 years. And for the past few years, I got to do the process as a parent as well, you know, go through the whole college admissions process as a parent. And one of the big things that I learned, you know, thankfully, is that the information that I was telling other families is the advice I gave my daughter. So that was a good thing, knowing that I was saying the same thing to both groups.
You practice what you preached.
100%. But one of the things that I learned in the process, and it was based on a conversation when I took my daughter on one of our first college visits, and we were in the room, and I happened to know the person in the admissions office at that university. I'm not going to say which university, but I knew the person. And so a lot of the engagement during that visit were things that I was asking and things that I had on my mind. And I remember my daughter on the drive home, you know, she's saying, you know, I don't feel like you gave me an opportunity to ask the questions that I had of this person. It hit me when she said that. And she said it in stronger language, but, you know, I won't get into that. Those exact words, but the point was made, and it was one that I think that all folks need to be mindful of, is that this whole search process, I think parents, we do have a role. Number one, as parents, we should be willing to have those hard, difficult conversations on things like finances. Finances are real, and not waiting until the month before a student is supposed to make that decision, as the first time we're having those decisions, conversations about finances. But parents have a role in the process, but ultimately you should let your student drive the whole process and lead the process, and you be there as a resource. And again, putting those guardrails on those parameters that may be non-negotiable. Cost and finances are obviously one of those things. So that's one bit of advice that I would give to listeners out there. The other is that, and I alluded to this earlier, but I think it just bears repeating, is that students should not take an admission decision as one that equates to that university saying that, yeah, we know you can be successful, or no, you can't be successful at our institution, because that is not what the admissions process is designed for. You know, it's ultimately looking to build a class to support our priorities and our mission. And thus with that, there are going to be certain things that are going to be outside of a student's control. The size of that class, student has absolutely nothing to do with. And when you're talking about that, along with things like supply and demand, you know, there are going to be, unfortunately, some students who are not able to be admitted to a particular university. But that in no way should be something that a student or a parent takes as that university is saying that I should not be, I can't be successful. Or, you know, questioning, well, you took this student and not my student, so there must be something flawed or messed up in your whole application review process. Because, again, it all boils down to, you know, what is at the heart of the process for any university. And so not taking the decision personally, because it is not meant to be one that equates to the student's ability to be successful at that institution, because it's much bigger than that. And then also when they're thinking about the whole search process, understanding that it is collaborative, but letting your student drive the process.
All those are tremendous pieces of advice, Vern. Again, I can't thank you enough. Obviously, UConn is so lucky to have you, as were we during this episode. I do hope to have you again for yet another follow-up episode. You are awesome. Thank you, Vern.
Thank you, John. Thank you. And good luck to your listeners out there going through this process.
Absolutely. And one last thing to say, thank you all for listening in. Take care all, and best wishes.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.
Thank you for listening to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success.